Welcome back, everybody, for our next episode on the Revis and Butthead podcast. In this episode, we are going to put on our GM hats, gulp down some endless coffees from Dunkin' Donuts, and we're going to go through the offseason in its entirety. I am your Jets general manager, and Hussein, my co-host, is the assistant to the general manager.
You're kidding.
We started with considering veteran trade targets. And then after that, we moved on into the player cuts and re-signings. And then ultimately, we ended off this mock offseason with our free agent signings and our draft. Now, before we go into the first stage of the Revis and Butthead mock offseason, Hussein, I think this would be a very good time to at least quickly describe what our tentative strategy was going into this mock offseason for what we were looking for.
What's going on, guys? So I think our biggest strategy was understanding the fact that we have a ton of holes. We don't have as much money as we really think we do. And you can only play so many rookies because you can't start 10 rookies. It's just not possible. So we really went in trying to be smart about free agency, not trying to splurge on any one guy and sign as many mid-tier quality starters as possible and try to supplement that with high-end talent, high-ceiling talent in the draft.
I like the way you put that, Hussein. It was perfectly described.
You can't sign all pros in free agency. You draft all pros.
Unless you sign them starters. $20 million
unless you're trying to pay them 20, which is unfortunately more than half our cap space.
Right. With that being said, speaking of splurging, Hussein, you were the one that really took charge in looking into the trade targets. Tell me what you found. Tell me who some of the targets are. Just describe to the audience what was going on here.
So I'll start in a bit of reverse order from here. Let's start with the guy who talked about a little bit, Marcus Peters, as a trade target. This guy has been traded before twice. He surprisingly doesn't get traded that much. I mean, he's been traded twice, which is a lot for someone who's good as he is. He's coming off a torn ACL in Baltimore. There are rumors they may be looking to move on. Surprisingly, when he got traded to Baltimore from LA, the cost was a fifth and a linebacker, which is just so low for Marcus Peters. At the end of the day, we didn't go for it because we didn't think he was a total fit for this defense. He's a press man corner. He's got incredible ball skills. I'm not saying I'd be upset if the Jets actually traded for him. It's just we couldn't, I think, properly evaluate what a cost would have been for him, throwing the risk of him coming off the ACL, and then the fact that he's more of a man than zone corner just didn't add up for our six right now. So moving on, we're going to talk about a few edge rushers. Let's talk about the Smith brothers up in Green Bay. Starting with Za'Darius Smith, who is just an absolute monster. I would love if we could have him. There's a lot of rumors the Packers could cut him. Obviously, he wants to stay. He posted that goodbye post on Instagram, leading people to think he's going to leave. He got hurt this year. He didn't play the whole year. He played one game, but he's been in Green Bay for 2 years, 12 and a half and 13 and a half sacks. The only problem with Za'Darius Smith and trading for him is that knowing Green Bay is going to cut him, you kind of think, oh, swoop in, trade a sixth round pick for the guy and add him. But because of the way his contract got restructured, he's due $20.5 million. It's just not a hit we can afford for someone to play one game last year.
That's a big lump of money. And I would also like to add that Za'Darius Smith, he didn't play almost all of last year, aside from one game, like you said, but that was due to a back injury. And I don't know about you, but back injuries don't randomly appear and disappear. So that would concern me, considering especially with the injuries we have already dealt with Carl Lawson. It's not exactly the best idea to add another edge rusher who, albeit is a great impact edge rusher, if he can't stay healthy and on the field.
Yeah, so let's talk about the other Smith brother, Preston Smith. He has stayed healthy. His 3 years in Green Bay have been a little up and down, 12 sacks, 4 sacks, and then 9 this year. We didn't really go after him. Once again, because Green Bay restructured to work around keeping Aaron Rodgers last year, his cap hit this year is $20 million for 2022, and he'll be a free agent after. again, another rumor of a guy potentially going to be cut. I just don't think it's worth that sort of cap hit when you could probably get him in free agency for significantly less, or at least make a run at him. So getting some of the bookkeeping out of the way, let's really talk about the guys people are excited about from the trade talkers, and that's the wide receivers. So for wide receivers, we tried to base everything off the most recent trade, which was Buffalo getting Stephon Diggs for a first round pick, number 22, which ended up being Justin Jefferson, of course, a fourth, a fifth, and a sixth, and they got a seventh back. So using the trade value chart, that came out to 860 points. And for reference, 860 points is a lot. Our pick 10 is worth about 1,300. So obviously you're never going to trade pick 10 for receiver, but that's just 860 picks slots you around pick 19 in the draft. So on Stephon Diggs, I don't think any receiver in the trade market, those receivers, Cooper, Ridley, Brandon Cooks, because he gets traded every year and Houston's a mess, and Jerry Jeudy with the rumors of Denver looking to add more draft capital to trade for a quarterback. I don't think any of those receivers would cost the 860 points it cost for Stephon Diggs. And here's why. Stephon Diggs, when he got traded, just signed an extension with the Vikings. And that extension, downright highway robbery for Buffalo. Stephon Diggs at the time was coming off back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons. And when he got traded to Buffalo, he was signed for four more years at $14 million a year. That kind of money is just, it's nothing. Joseph, if you want to hear a reference as to who's getting more money than Stephon Diggs next year?
I didn't know I'm suddenly Joseph. I guess when Hussein puts his GM hat on, or is it assistant to the GM hat on, he becomes very businesslike. What is it?
Stops. Wow. Robbie Anderson, Jarvis Landry, Brandon Cooks, Tyler Lockett, Kenny Galladay, Amari Cooper, Keenan Allen, all making more money than arguably what I think is a top five receiver in the NFL. So that's why Stephon Diggs got traded for as much as he did, because he was an explosive young receiver with a resume under contract for a long time at a downright bargain. Stephon Diggs is only getting $1 million a year more than Corey Davis. So I referenced all these four trade targets around 500 points, but at the end of the day, we decided not to do them. And here's why. Starting with Jerry Jeudy, I don't think it's realistic right now until we start seeing some more concrete rumors about him that Denver would truly look to move him. And someone like Jerry Jeudy, we did agree yesterday, I think we'd give up 35 or 30 in a heartbeat. I don't think we were sure if it would be enough. That 35 or 38 is a trade value of about 550 and 520 points respectively. Don't think that's enough for Jerry Jeudy, but I don't know if any of you follow Daniel Jeremiah on Twitter. He kind of laid out that same exact scenario where the Jets get a second for Jerry, give up a second for Jerry Jeudy, and Denver uses that trade capital to trade for a quarterback. So we have Calvin Ridley, who everyone knows wants out of Atlanta, didn't play at all this year. His trade would be a little messy right now, although I'd love to trade for him in real life, as established as Stephon Diggs coming out of Minnesota. The only difference is Stephon Diggs signed for an extension for pennies on the dollar, and Calvin Ridley is due a new contract soon as you trade for him. So you have to pay him as soon as you trade for him. You have to keep that in mind. One of my more favorite targets this offseason is Amari Cooper. Amari Cooper has just been putting up 1,000-yard receivers forever. Somehow, he's at the same age as Calvin Ridley, but been in the NFL for 2 or 3 years longer. The problem with Amari Cooper is the same reason Dallas is looking to potentially move on from him this offseason. His cap hit is $22 million. As Joe will get to, we don't have that much money to absorb that kind of cap hit while giving up draft capital and also signing players at the numerous positions we need. So at the end of the day, we spent a lot of time discussing potential trade options, if it was worth it, if it's not. We decided not to make any trades, leave our draft picks as it is, and go into free agency with our cap space and focusing on free agent targets to upgrade our roster instead. Will the Jets do this in real life? I don't think so. I think there are going to be a lot more trade options available. I think they will make a move, but for the sake of our GMs, our simulator, with me and Joe in the chair, we didn't do anything.
And also something the audience has to remember is that Joe Douglas has a tendency to absolutely fleece other teams in trades. So I couldn't give ourselves just that big of a gift without making this mock offseason seem too unrealistic.
I would not be surprised if Joe Douglas trades like a third round pick for Jerry Jeudy. But if we did that in a mock offseason, people would riot.
Big Joey D is going to walk in and he's going to pick up the phone in style with his shades on, and he's going to rip that phone open, dial up the team that he's going to call, and he's going to offer up Ashton Davis straight up for one of these receivers, and he's going to get a yes because it's Joey D. But going back to Hussein's point about us not having as much cap space as we thought, now currently our cap space, and this includes the money that will be allocated to our draft picks, it opens at $35.65 million, including draft picks. So that's just what we have right now. That's before cuts, re-signings, etc. If we were to take on a contract of Cooper's magnitude, that would drop us down to $13.65 million. Now, in some cases, the Cowboys can offer to pay some of that contract. That could help and tip the scales a little bit in a way. But even if they offer to pay maybe $5 or $6 million, that still only puts us at $18 million, which really doesn't help us with all the holes on our roster. So with that being said, I think we made a well-decided decision to skip out on the trade market for the receivers. Now, going into our next stage of our mock offseason, this is where we get into the cut candidates and who we want to re-sign. Now, for our cut candidates, we pretty much blew through this section in about maybe 20 seconds because it was that easy. Player number one to get the boot, Ryan Griffin. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That move saves $3.2 million. So we have a current cap of $35.65 million, like I said. Adding 3.2 gets us a $38.85 million. Not bad. Some more players that need to be punted right off this team. This is the biggest player. I would happily escort him right to the limo to drive out of New York. Greg Van Rotten. Goodbye. He went to Chaminade. Just get out of New York.
Did he really?
He went to Chaminade. Yes, he did.
We knew that and we signed him anyways. Like,
I don't
know.
What
did we expect?
I really don't know. And the way he looked like when he was blocking some of these defenders, it looked like he went to Chaminade.
Wow.
But that move saves a whopping $3.5 million. In addition to those two previously mentioned, we also decided to cut Ty Johnson. We just didn't have room for Butterfingers on this team anymore. So he's going to get the punt. And then lastly, we're going to cut LaMichael Perine. Now, that does give us a little bit of a hit to our running back room. So we made it a point that we had to address running back somewhere given these cuts. And especially since Michael Carter had some issues staying healthy, being the RB1 in this offense. Now, cutting Ty Johnson, that saves just under $1 million, coming in at $900,000. LaMichael Perine, that saves us about $700,000. With all those cuts, that brings us to $43.95 million. And now this brings us to our re-signed players. Some of the players that we considered obviously didn't make it. We also didn't fully look into a lot of players just because, number one, position. Number two, the writing was on the wall that the player wasn't returning. So going into our first re-signing, we decided to bring back Laurent Duvernay-Tardif. And we gave him an annual contract of $2.25 million. He would likely serve as either the starting right guard if we aren't able to secure an interior offensive lineman, whether it be in free agency or the draft. And if we are able to secure a high level talent in the draft or sign someone, he would serve as a definite above average backup, which this is something the Jets have lacked for quite a number amount of years. Our next player, Joe Flacco, we gave him $3 million. He's going to come back and be a backup. Kind of a required move. Someone needs to be behind Zach Wilson who has experience, who can help him learn the game. He played better once Joe Flacco was on the team. We just can't have Mike White on the team as serving as the main backup. Just can't have it.
Never say that about Mike White ever again.
Yes, Mike White, the GOAT, Mr. Dump-Off King against the Bengals. We beat the Super Bowl runner-ups, yada, yada, yada. And technically, we beat the Rams, too, thanks to Frank Gore. And I don't even know who blocked that punt, but thanks to him.
That game made me more upset, I think, than I've ever been in my entire life.
I felt a part of me die watching that game as the Jets won.
Terrible. I like cried. Do you remember last year? You were like, dude, we're going 0-16. This team is too bad to win a football game. I'm like, Joe, it happens. Like, shitty teams get lucky.
I was so stunned. I was so certain that this team would be defeated. The Jets in the beginning of the year looked like the Lions when they went undefeated.
Do you remember, you know, you always tell me a blind nut finds its squirrel every once in a while.
Did you just say a blind nut finds its squirrel?
Oh, God. I meant blind squirrel finds its nut.
This is exactly why you're the assistant to the GM.
I'm revolting. I'm organizing a coup. This is Adam Gase getting Mike Maccagnan fired coup.
Oh, really? Okay. 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 Well, let's see how that works out for you. Whether it'll be a Revis move or a butthead move. We'll see.
Listen, if our viewers don't know it already, you're very clearly the butthead of this podcast, but
oh, I don't know, Stan. I think you're the real butthead of this podcast. Wow. Moving on though, because we kind of got distracted a little bit with re-signed players. Who knew re-signed players could get us on a tangent so easily? The next player I decided to bring back, I brought back LaMarcus Joyner and I gave him $1.5 million. With that said, the reason I decided to give him that is because one, he's cheap. Two, he's an extra body in the room. Three, he provides experience to the secondary, which is very young, as we all know. And four, given the elbow injury, which seemed like such a really unlucky injury for that to happen, you can get away with giving him such small money. And what's the worst that's going to happen? He gets hurt and doesn't play. It's just another body for $1.5 million with upside, especially if he can contribute in nickel packages. Why not? I'm all in.
You know what injury LaMarcus Joyner had last year? It's actually the most insane thing.
It was some elbow injury, right?
A torn triceps tendon. You ever hear of anyone tearing their triceps tendon?
No, honestly. I've never even seen one of those workout videos where you have these gym bros deciding to lift these ungodly amounts of weight and they just decide that their muscles just give out and just ripple and completely rip off the bone.
Like, how do you tear your triceps tendon? How does that happen in an NFL game?
I don't know. I don't know. Sane, you should be the one to know this, Mr. Med School. You should what tears your tricep.
That's why I'm so shell-shocked right now. How do you tear your triceps tendon?
Well, Hussein, how do you tear your triceps tendon?
I'm going to be honest. I don't know.
This is the future of medicine here, ladies and gentlemen.
Ouch.
Thankfully, you're still in med school and you haven't graduated and you can't tell me. That's what school's for. Going into our next player that we re-signed, I brought back Tevin Coleman and I gave him $900,000 a year. He's a body. There's going to be young running backs in this room. And for under $1 million, I think that he can provide at least some juice for a game or two if he has to fill in. And you know you're going to get an average product on the field. And considering an average product, someone who can catch, someone who knows his responsibility, hits the right hole. And even sometimes, once in a blue moon, make a guy miss a tackle. He didn't do it much, but he did show an ability to do it at times last year. So that's enough for me to give him less than $1 million to come back.
He definitely had some juice last year when Carter went down late in the second half of the season.
I was kind of shocked, honestly. I thought he was going to be just a guy when we signed him, but he filled in admirably when MC32 went down. So
I was just as shell shocked as when I found out LaMarcus Joyner tore his triceps tendon, but.
On to the next player. I decided to re-sign Braxton Berrios for $5 million. Now, if you listen to our last podcast, we had quite the debate about the rumor that Braxton Berrios was seeking $9 million. I think that's utter tomfoolery, nonsense, just never happening. I don't foresee it at all. So I gave him what the market dictates. And I think $5 million is more than fair. I compared his contract to what Keelan Cole got. Keelan Cole got $5.5 million from the Jets, had return ability. He wasn't an all-pro returner, but he was able to get the job done. Where the difference comes in between Braxton Berrios and Keelan Cole is that Keelan Cole had much better production from the wide receiver spot, as I said in the previous episode. With that said, I gave him pretty close to $5.5 million. I gave him $5 million. If I had to, I would have probably went to $5.5 million. I don't think I go over that. If it was $6 million, I say no, I walk away. But since this is my off season, this is our off season, technically the mock off season, I was able to give him $5 million. Negotiations aren't a real thing in this mock off season. So that was the decision that was made. Now, leading into our very last signing among the re-signed players, that's Kyle Phillips. And I know that's most likely not a name a lot of listeners are gonna expect to be re-signed, but he was a great run defender. He is actually an elite run defender. And he was hurt for a lot of last year, unfortunately. He didn't come back until late in the season. So unfortunately, his presence wasn't really ever felt. But the Jets need elite run defenders, especially from the defensive line. Now, obviously, the Jets need linebackers, but having someone who could plug up a gap and even take on two bodies at once, that just makes the linebackers' lives easier. So I gave Kyle Phillips $800,000 a year. I think that's plenty fair. I think the Jets need to really work on their run defense, and he would be a good step having him in on the early downs to stop the run. With all those signings, that brings our cap space to $30.5 million. So we explored one other avenue where we can try and squeeze out as much lemonade that is in the lemon. And we decided to restructure CJ Mosley's contract. Now, Hussein, can you go into some details on how we restructured his contract to open up some more cap space?
Yeah, I will. And right before we do that, I want to talk about one guy that we chose not to bring back, the most high profile free agent we probably have, Folau Fatukasi. We chose not to bring him back because he's just not a fit in the 3-4. I mean, the 4-3 defense. He's a 3-4 run stuffing nose tackle and one of the best in the NFL. But he was pretty bad in the 4-3. It just didn't fit. So we chose not to bring him back. At the amount of money it would cost us, probably upwards of around $6 to $7 million. So now, speaking to CJ Mosley, his base salary this year, his cap hit, is coming in at around $17 million, which is, I think, one of the highest for linebackers.
I think it's either second or third, because Darius Leonard got $18 million.
Wow. So something big about CJ Mosley, give Mike Maccagnan credit. He, as much as he overpaid for CJ Mosley, he did kind of work the contract up well for the future, because after CJ Mosley has 3 years left on the deal, this year is the only year he has any guaranteed money left. I think he has maybe $2 or $3 million the year after and none the third year from now. So what we did is we restructured CJ Mosley and converted it from a base salary of $17 million to $9 million with a $2.5 million converted to bonus to push off some of his money to the future years, giving him some guaranteed money in the future, giving him some insurance for the future while lessening our cap hit burden now. So that saved us $8 million, allowing us to walk into free agency on day one with $38.5 million.
Now, that may not be as high as a lot of Jets fans originally thought, but It was enough money to at least sign some impact starters. So we wanted to approach free agency as if we were actually calling up agents and discussing contracts. So with all that said, the first thing that we looked at in free agency was we went straight for the safeties. Now, looking at some of the names in the safety market, I'm just going to list off some of the names. At free safety first, we had Tyrann Mathieu. I estimated his market value to be just under $15 million a year. Marcus Williams, he is actually at $15 million a year. And then Jesse Bates, he clocked in at about $14 million a year. At strong safety, the contracts were a little bit more team-friendly and cap-friendly, as Quandre Diggs was the headliner of the group at $12.1 million. And then we had among the likes of Keanu Neal at $5 million, Jabril Peppers at $4 million. We had Jaron Curse at $7 million, and then Justin Reed at $6 million. So with all that said, considering how cheap the strong safety class was in this free agent class, we opted to really focus on the strong safeties just because both Hussein and I felt that we could find an impact starter in the strong safeties, in the strong safety class, given the value of the contract that was shown. And that is quite important to consider when you only have about $38 million to play with in free agency. So with that said, our first signing was Jayron Kearse, a safety on the Cowboys. Now, the Cowboys, they run a very, very similar scheme to the Jets. Dan Quinn is a defensive coordinator there. Dan Quinn, Robert Saleh, Gus Bradley, they all run the cover three scheme or variations of it. He knows the defense. He knows tentatively what his responsibilities will be. Obviously, there are some slight variations in terms of coverages that are shown. So with that said, Jayron Kearse, I think he could step right into this secondary on this team, and he could definitely help, especially in terms of fitting on run plays, which is something that the Jets desperately need. And I trust him in his responsibilities to be able to at least match up against tight ends or running backs. And that's also, again, something the Jets heavily struggled with this year. Most of their yards was given up to running backs and tight ends. We need somebody who can at least get physical up at the line of scrimmage, who can provide some coverage ability in the immediate front seven box. I really like the signing at first, and Jayron Kearse only clocked in at $7 million. Hussein, would you like to say anything about Jayron Kearse?
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of his game. I brought him up to you yesterday. I think a big thing about Jayron Kearse is, like you said, already played this game. He knows it. But the biggest thing about him is that I think he's strictly an in-the-box safety from how he was used in Dallas mostly. Obviously, he can play some deep, and our safeties need to be interchangeable. But just recognizing that that's kind of the role he fits. And there's nothing wrong with that. But that just kind of impacts your draft plans. Now, you do kind of need to look for a true center fielder. And it would be kind of the same thing if you went after Jesse Bates. It just kind of flip-flopped in that sense. So moving on to the next position we targeted, Joe, this is your guy. I'll let you take it away.
The very next player we decided to sign, since obviously when I listed out all the players in my notes, this position was very close to safety. And that's the cornerback room. Now, we necessarily didn't go for the splash signing a cornerback. Obviously, you have the headliners with the likes of Stephon Gilmore. We estimated that he'd get a contract somewhere around $14 million, probably a short-term deal given his age. Not sure exactly his age, but I know he's over 30 years old at this point. Another headliner for this corner class, that is Carlton Davis. He clocked in at $19.6 million annually was his market value. Something to remember about these corners is that cornerback can be definitely considered a premium position in free agency. Overpaying happens a lot in this position group, as Jets fans know, because we witnessed Trumaine Johnson get a bag from Mike Maccagnan just to do absolutely nothing on the field.
And we were fans of Trumaine Johnson getting in the bag, for what it's worth. It is one of the few mistakes we have made. We have not made many mistakes.
We have not, but that was a true butthead decision.
We're both butthead for that one.
Absolutely. But going back into who we decided and agreed on that we were going to sign, we signed Dante Jackson, cornerback from Carolina. The guy's got blazing speed. His catch-up speed is insane. I can fully trust him being up close to the line of scrimmage, playing that deep third, even if he gives up some ground to the receiver on the release. He's got the speed to catch up. I think he is a perfect fit on the outside for the Jets. And something that the Jets really need to make sure that they do a good job on defense is getting players that have an element of speed. That's the way the NFL is evolving these days, with all the passing concepts that are coming out, with a lot of these freak tight ends that have to be covered now, like wide receivers, Kyle Pitts, Mike Gesicki, and others. So that just makes the cornerback and just the overall speed of the defense all that more important. So Dante Jackson, $8 million. I think that this value for him was right where it should be, especially when given some of the other options. Some of the other options include Jason Verrett. He was probably the cheapest at $3 million, but his injury history really, really scared us. He didn't even play this year. Last year, I believe, was his only real healthy season in the past maybe 4 or 5 years. His injury history was that bad. So we stayed far, far away, even though he was so cheap at $3 million. Some other players that we could have targeted that would have made sense could have been Chris Harris, Patrick Peterson, Casey Hayward. And I do want to bring up that Casey Hayward, he is another person cut from the same cloth as Robert Saleh in terms of defensive schematics. He played almost his entire career in a cover three scheme. He just played on the Raiders, which I'm pretty sure Gus Bradley was a defensive coordinator for. I may be wrong on that. But he definitely brings that veteran experience to the secondary room that we were looking for. But ultimately, given the value, we both felt better about Dante Jackson. And we also believe that Dante Jackson has some upside in this defensive scheme. So a little bit also was projected, but I really feel good about this, about Dante Jackson, Hussein. So do you have any other additional thoughts on Dante Jackson being signed?
Not really. I mean, you kind of hit everything you kind of said. You know, he just profiles as a zone corner with great speed. For someone as young as him, with the potential he has at $8 million, I think you are looking at not a steal, but a very good value signing who you can depend on to be a starter, which is exactly what we outlined, what we wanted to target free agency when we started this. So there's nothing wrong with not getting JC Jackson in free agency. You'd have to be realistic about it.
Exactly. Now, moving on to the next player that we signed, I remember as we were going through this mock free agency period, is we made the first two signings on defense with Dante Jackson as well as Jaron Curse. But then we really felt that we needed to make at least some impact on offense in terms of veteran presence, given how young the offense is as well. Hussein, what player did we go to next?
David Njoku.
Absolutely. He is one of my favorite players in this free agency class. Hussein, why did we choose David Njoku over the others?
There's a lot of good options at tight end free agency this year, even beyond the top guys. We know about Dalton Schultz and Mike Gesicki. Let's put it clear, we're not signing Mike Gesicki. Actually, this is interesting, Joe. I think you might like this. There's a rumor that he may be tagged by Miami, and if he does, he's looking to be profiled under receiver, not tight end, in terms of tag purposes.
Wow. That's pretty big.
That's big. That's a lot. That's almost twice as much money.
And I'm pretty sure the Dolphins have a lot of money to play with. So that takes a big hit to their big treasure chest.
We really wanted Dalton Schultz. Obviously, who doesn't? But it's just a lot of money. He came in at over twice as much as most other tight ends. Other great targets before I get to David Njoku, CJ Uzomah. Would love him. I don't see him leaving Cincinnati after they just made a Super Bowl. So Robert Tonyan, coming off a torn ACL, is projected around $10 to $11 million, even though he's coming from the same scheme, playing for LaFleur in Green Bay, and a phenomenal red zone threat. He hit double-digit touchdowns a year ago. I'm just too much money for us, especially coming off a torn ACL. So we really settled between Gerald Everett and David Njoku, and we came to a point where we preferred David Njoku. He underused in Cleveland is the right word.
Absolutely.
Because they added Austin Hooper. He has great run blocking ability. He's fast. He can win at the catch, make plays after the catch. He can do stuff for us that, even though he's not elite, he's not the top tier tight end, he still brings more juice to the position than we've had since Dustin Keller.
And I would like to iterate that David Njoku, he definitely isn't an elite talent like Dalton Schultz is at the tight end position, but he has something that even the Jets just haven't had at tight end for a while, and that's just sheer competence. Like he just belongs at tight end in the NFL. He can start, and he got overshadowed because of the depth that the Browns built at tight end between adding Austin Hooper, drafting Harrison Bryant, and of course they drafted David Njoku before that. So that's a three-man tight end room, and all of them were getting significant playing time just because of the scheme similarities, especially to what the New York Jets want to do on offense. Now, given all that, I just want to share some PFF stats given the tight end room. So David Njoku, he clocked in about 36 catches and 4 touchdowns. Now, just looking at a lot of the other tight ends, Gesicki, Schultz, Ertz, Gerald Everett, most of them had over 50 catches and about more than four touchdowns, with Gesicki only coming in at two touchdowns. David Njoku, he came in with 36 catches, four touchdowns, and he was able to produce on those limited reps. And that's, like I said, again, he has two other bodies in that room that get significant playing time. So 36 catches in a world where Austin Hooper is likely getting 50 catches and Harrison Bryant is probably in the same ballpark as David Njoku in terms of catches. Those are some good, good numbers. And I'm just going to share some stats that PFF released. Now David Njoku's contested catch percentage, he came in at 42.9%. It's not the best. It's also not the worst. I don't think I would be throwing jump balls into David Njoku regardless anyway. That's really not what I signed him for. What I did sign David Njoku for was his ability to both run block and pass block. His PFF pass block grade came in at 72.4%, with PFF's run block grade coming in at 64.1, which, if you look at a lot of the other tight ends in this available free agent class, if you average those out, he probably has the best numbers, or one of the best numbers, compared to the other tight ends. Now, the only tight end that has better run block and pass block grades collectively includes Max Williams, who really wasn't all that considered because of injury concerns throughout his career. And he just doesn't get on the field all that much.
Also not enough of a receiving threat, I think, that we need.
Absolutely. And going to Dalton Schultz, he definitely had some better grades collectively than David Njoku. He was more consistent across run blocking and pass blocking, with Njoku slightly beating him out in pass blocking. And as you've seen mentioned earlier, this signing a tight end really came down to either Gerald Everett at $6.5 million or David Njoku at $6.7 million. And looking at these grades, I'm just going to compare the two really quick. Like I've said, Njoku 36 catches, Gerald Everett had 48. It's pretty similar. Gerald Everett and Njoku both had the same number of touchdowns. They both had four. Gerald Everett had 100% contested catch percentage, which probably is due to limited opportunities.
Yeah, he only had five contested catches all year. I mean, don't get me wrong, going 5 for 5 is absolutely sick, but extrapolate that over a whole season before you actually say your contested catch percentage is 100.
Right. David Njoku wasn't obviously as good. He had a 42.9% contested catch percentage, but like I said before, with what we want to do on offense, we're not throwing jump balls to our tight ends.
God help me if you start throwing jump balls to David Njoku this season.
I think if that happens, I think I'd want to rip my hair out. I think I'd decide to give myself a mental health break from the New York Jets for a little bit, if that's the route that they wanted to go on offense.
What do you think is worse, bootlegs to Ryan Griffin or jump balls to David Njoku?
Anything regarding Ryan Griffin is worse. Anything regarding Ryan Griffin is worse. Easily. Without a doubt.
Okay, I like it.
Moving on. Going back to the PFF run block grade, compared to Gerald Everett, Gerald Everett had 57.2% compared to David Njoku's 64.1. That's about almost a 10% increase.
They're both still above average, though, because those percents are percentiles.
Absolutely. Gerald Everett, his pass blocking was slightly better than Njoku's. His pass block grade came in at 76.8%, while Njoku came at 72.4. So just knowing tendencies on what the Jets want to do generally on offense is that we know the Jets really want to run the ball and they want to run play action off of it. So knowing that, we ultimately decided to sign David Njoku for $6.7 million. And I think he immediately steps in as a competent tight end who can just get the job done. He's not going to do anything flashy. He'll probably look pretty decent after the catch and some yak opportunities because he has some speed. But he also provides some stability in the blocking game, which I could not stress enough before this last year started, that if the Jets ran two tight end packages, we were in trouble.
It was giving up.
And what did the Jets do from like weeks one to like week eight is they ran a whole bunch of two tight end sets when they did not have the roster to do so.
They didn't even have two tight ends running a two tight end set. They're still running it.
They didn't even have one tight end, and they're running two tight ends. I mean, let's be honest. But Njoku immediately steps in as tight end who can be trusted out on the field. Now, moving on to the next position group where we made a signing.
This is my guy. I'm really big on him. The linebacker from Atlanta, Foyesid Olukun. He's coming 4 years in Atlanta. As you know, we have some experience with Jeff Ulbrich there. This year, he kind of took on a huge role for them, a much bigger role. This year, he had 192 total tackles, two sacks, three interceptions. The year before, with Ulbrich there, he had 117 tackles, three sacks, two interceptions. So he's put up numbers. He was clocked at a 4.48 at his 40-yard dash at the combine. So he's got the speed. He has familiarity in the system. I think he would be a great fit. I think that would also let CJ Mosley slide over to the outside from the middle, which would definitely be a benefit for him because he's older, he's lost a step, he has decreased range. He can't be in the middle, especially of his – he could still call plays being an outside linebacker. Just because you're not in middle linebacker, there's not many you can call the plays. It just means that you're now less out of a position to be exposed because you have less ground to cover. So I think Foyesid Olukun would make the defense better. It puts CJ Mosley in a better position to succeed, which would make him better. I think it's a killing two birds with one stone and getting a guy that you know Jeff Ulbrich likes. He played well under him. It just fits on all fronts.
I would have to agree with you saying I think Foyesid Olukun, he's got great speed. And in this defense, you're going to be doing a lot of chasing and tackling just because the defensive line has to be so aggressive getting upfield. And man, he can really chase and tackle, make tackles from sideline to sideline. So I really like the signing. He's a tackle machine. We already have one in CJ Mosley. Let's go get us another one. This would certainly help also in the slow developing run plays that really gashed the Jets last year, whether it was the counters or the misdirection runs. Those runs just absolutely obliterated this defense. And if we want to have any chance at developing this defense in order to make at least some stops to put the ball back in Zach Wilson's hands, we need to be able to stop those runs because that's the number one thing teams are going to do to an over-aggressive defensive line is they're going to run slow developing blocking run plays where they're going to let the defensive lineman get upfield and they're going to blindside you, whether it's from the left or right side. So that just makes linebacker all that more important in this defense. Now, there were some other options at linebacker that could have been considered. No real other name was all that tempting. I will say there was Dante Hightower. He was on the expensive side. He was just under $9 million. Another name that we really did consider was Quan Alexander because he also had some experience in this scheme. We estimated his price to be just under $3 million a year, but the reason we didn't ultimately sign him is because we weren't a fan of his injury history, and because of that, we ultimately sided with Foyesid Olukun. But moving back actually to the offensive side of the ball, we were really considering, and when I say we, I really mean me. I was really tempted to make a signing at guard, which really hasn't been talked about on Jets Twitter, because there is a guard that's available on the Rams. His name's Austin Corbett. He would have came in at $8.7 million annually. Now, he would have been a great fit in this offense. He is a good run blocker. He has very good lateral movement. And he would fit the theme of the Jets wanting to really establish the run game. And the best part is he shows competence in the passing game. There's a lot of analytics being thrown around on Twitter that compare the responsibility that is taken of when a sack occurs, whether it's the QB's fault or the offensive line's fault. And something that I noticed on one of the graphics, and it will be retweeted on our Twitter page, is that Matthew Stafford was all the way on the end of the spectrum that shows that his offensive line was not really at fault for a lot of the sacks that he was taking. And honestly, Stafford was kept pretty clean all year. He didn't take very many sacks, and that also goes to show credit for his ability as a quarterback. But it helps it helps a whole lot more when your offensive line could do a really good job at just giving you the 2.5, even 3 seconds to make your progressions, make the right read and throw the ball, especially when you have weapons like Cooper Kupp catching the ball and running after it. Although ultimately we decided against this, we did some thinking in the future and we realized that if the board broke a certain way where Kayvon Thibodeau doesn't drop to 4, that would put us in a little bit of a pickle in terms of who we would take. Now, obviously, Evan Neal, Ike Ekwonu, those are the top players that are always mocked to the Jets at number 4. Or Kayvon Thibodeau, obviously. But if he goes in this scenario, that really leaves only Kyle Hamilton on the board, really, that could be taken. So we wanted to make sure that we had more options available to us, especially in the draft. So we ultimately decided to pass on Austin Corbett in free agency. And that brings me into the next position group that I want to talk about because it is also on offense. We decided to give a $5.5 million annual contract to Emmanuel Sanders. And the reason for this is because we wanted to provide some sort of veteran experience in the wide receiver room that can help guide the young guys and help mentor them. Emmanuel Sanders has done it at a lot of his recent stops, especially in Buffalo. And just you could even see the impact it had throughout the year, just how Gabriel Davis developed and ultimately turned in one of the best postseason performances a wide receiver has ever done in the postseason. So with that said, Emmanuel Sanders, $5.5 million. He's had some injury issues in the past, but I think with the names that we have at receiver and even the names that we could add in the draft, we can make it so that Emmanuel Sanders is not going to be on the field for a whole lot of snaps each game and that we can really rotate them in and he can serve in the rotational role where he is best suited for. Hussein, do you have any more additional comments on Emmanuel Sanders?
No, I think you hit it all there. I think going into the draft with the wide receiver room of Corey Davis, Elijah Moore, Braxton Berrios, and Emmanuel Sanders gives you good depth. Obviously, you're still missing the true number one guy, but I think we went into this free agency with the intention of trying to find that number one guy in the draft because you're not going to be able to find one bang for buck in free agency. So I think getting a good depth piece, because Emmanuel Sanders is still a good player, deserves to be on an NFL field, a competent player, is the exact type of guy we've been targeting all free agency. I think he is a great fit.
I definitely agree. Those are all the signings that we made in free agency. Just to wrap up and just to give a good conclusion on how the free agency period shook out for us in this mock offseason was that we signed Jaron Curse. He fits in a strong safety. Then we signed Dante Jackson. Those two players were the big signings in our defensive secondary. Then we helped our front seven, specifically the linebacker, the Foyasad Oluokun. That was everything that was signed and added to our defensive unit in free agency. Over on the offensive side of the ball, we only made 2 signings, one of them being David Njoku. Immediately, we got a tight end who can actually start an NFL game and deserves to start an NFL game, which is kind of nice to have. And then we signed Emmanuel Sanders. He serves as the mentor role. He can give us quality routes. He's a good route runner. I trust him in this type of offense. And given the depth, as you alluded to, saying, I feel comfortable with that wide receiver room heading into the draft, knowing that we have to get a top talent at receiver. With that said, Hussein, I think it's draft time.
This is it. This is my time to shine now.
Is it April yet?
Is it April?
Moving into the draft, just to give some background, we used Pro Football Network as our mock draft simulator. We considered using PFF and others, but I felt that Pro Football Network gave us the best interface to use. And I also appreciated its randomness, mock draft in terms of who falls, who's available, especially in the second round, because that's important because we have a pretty good idea of who's potentially going to be available at 4 and 10, but we really don't know who's going to be available at 35 and 38. So with that said, Hussein, let's draft.
Well, the scenario that we laid out, we spent a lot of time arguing yesterday when it came to signing Austin Corbett. What do we do if KT and Hutchinson go before pick 4? And that just happened to us. KT, Hutchinson, Evan Neal, those were the top 3 picks. So at pick 4, we went with Ikem Ekwonu. With Ekwonu, He has played left tackle. He's played left guard. There are some saying that he has the flexibility to move to the right side. Obviously, that's where I think we want to play him his first year. We want to play him at right guard. Fingers crossed, praying that Mekhi Becton is healthy, play him at right guard. He is nasty. Best run blocker in this class. It's not even close. He's mean. He's still developing as a pass rusher. In that kind of sense, he reminds me a bit of AVT, knowing that you're going to get a near Pro Bowl level run blocker out of the gate, which is exactly what AVT was this year, but not, you know, developing as a pass rusher. But I think that line with just Becton, AVT, and Iguanu all running the ball as a run blocking offensive line, you could run the ball however you want, whenever you want. And that's going to make the offense a lot easier and a lot more fun to watch.
And that's also going to really open the play action passing game, just because you're going to have all these linebackers really biting down hard when they see the, when they see the handoff. And when Zach Wilson pulls that ball, that's really going to open up some big, big space in that middle of the defense where we can have receivers sneak behind them and they could get some big chunk plays. And that's what this Kyle Shanahan, Mike LaFleur offense really, really tries to attack in the defense. And with Ike Iguanu, the Jets would certainly be able to have their way running the ball. And that's something that we really haven't seen. I mean, since Chris Ivory, really. But before that, most known is when LaDainian Tomlinson and Sean Green were here, even Thomas Jones.
Those were the days.
Those really were the days. And we're just two Jets fans trying to get us back there in this mock off season. Now, since Neil, Thibodeau, and Hutchinson went, we had some players that we could have considered. We definitely consider Kyle Hamilton. And surprisingly enough, I was actually the one who was really considering it the most, because it seems like my assistant to the general manager wasn't all that interested in drafting Kyle Hamilton. But given all that, there was also George Karlaftis. I like George Karlaftis. I think he's got an okay floor as a player. He's got a pretty good floor, but his ceiling is a bit limited. That's why I ultimately just wanted to go with Ike Iguanu. Now, moving on to our number 10 pick, I'm just going to list off some notable names that went in between then. So before number 10, Kyle Hamilton went number 6 to the Panthers. We had Garrett Wilson, unfortunately, be taken by the Falcons.
That was heartbreaking.
It was really heartbreaking. But that's really it for the notable players among Jets fans that were taken. And at number 10, I think this is probably the easiest pick I've made all draft at number 10. And I was the one that was really immediately identifying him as the pick. And I know Hussein can attest to this, but Treylon Burks from Arkansas, he was the pick at number 10. He is a weapon to use. And everyone says Debo this, Debo that. First of all, I just want to get this out of the way. Debo is a unicorn. Debo is certainly special. I would be hard-pressed to say that we're going to see a Debo Samuel in this draft. Exactly. But Treylon Burks, he can do some of the things that Debo excelled at. And those are elements that the Jets do need in their offense, whether it's the jet sweeps, whether it's the go routes and making the grab on the go routes or the double moves. And he shows such fluid movement coming out of his release, and he shows some really, really good burst because he can create separation just on his speed alone. And he's also very, very physical. Hussein, do you have any other points to add about Treylon Burks being selected at number 10?
Nope. I love this pick. This is a run to the podium type of pick, I think. I don't compare him to Debo, but I've said this to you a lot. I think the way the Jets would use him, his usage would be similar to Debo. Used everywhere, slot, outside, even some running back in motion. Do everything kind of just pure weapon X is how I define Treylon Burks. It's how you define Debo Samuel as well. I'm not comparing him to him. I think that's how his usage would be with the Jets, how it should be. So I'm pumped with this pick. Now that wide receiver room looks a lot better with him and Emmanuel Sanders being added.
And I think something the Jets need to really work on is that they need to get as many receivers in that room as possible that can take these jet sweeps and move them around and have them motion and shift and all this motion before the snap that ultimately helps Zach Wilson make reads and read the coverage that the defense is in. like, just imagine an offense where Traylon Burks can go in an orbit motion or a jet sweep motion, and then Elijah Moore can do the same, and then Braxton Berrios can do the same. It just makes your wide receiver room so well-rounded, and even Emmanuel Sanders can still do it. That's the great part.
I do not want to see a orbit motion play to Emmanuel Sanders all year. I think that's honestly worse than the David Njoku jump ball, but
I don't think it's as bad as the David Njoku jump ball.
Oh, what's up?
I'm saying in a pinch where if injuries happen and he can do it, it's not like once Elijah Moore and Braxton Berrios both got hurt where the Jets suddenly turned into a stagnant offense that didn't do any motion.
Fair. I hate when you're right.
I love when I'm right.
All right. Moving on. Pick 35. This was my pick. I kind of took the reins here. I took Kingsley Enagbare, the edge rusher from South Carolina Gamecocks. We kind of established we wanted to go edge at this pick. We wanted to look at edge in free agency. Just with the way money was being moved around, we just couldn't afford it. There weren't guys that we could afford that we were – obviously, there were guys that we really wanted. We just couldn't afford them. And we knew we wanted to prioritize edge early. We were between him and Myjai Sanders here. I personally think there would have been no wrong pick between the two. Myjai Sanders also dominated at the college level. If you watched him versus Alabama, he's the only reason Cincinnati even really stayed in the game on defense. He just blew up everything for probably most of the first half. But we went with Enagbare here. Kingsley Enagbare was a standout this year for South Carolina. And believe it or not, South Carolina is in the SEC, which, wow, South Carolina, the SEC. So he was one of the best pass rushers in the SEC this year. Reading off some numbers to you, I know Joe's been reading off the numbers, but realistically, I'm the numbers guy. He's kind of stealing my role, and I'm not having it. I'm the one who reads off the numbers. Kingsley Enagbare this year, 92.5 pass rush grade. Highest by an edge rusher in the SEC since Myles Garrett.
Big numbers guy over here, getting a little territorial.
Dude, I got upset. You started pulling up all these percents about run blocking with tight ends, and I'm like, this is literally my job. What are you doing?
I don't mess around when it comes to tight ends, because I've been screaming ever since we started talking about this offseason, I wanted David Njoku. And I remember bringing him up to you, and you were like, no, really? David Njoku? He doesn't even start.
You're right. You have
grown on you. He's grown on you.
He's grown on me.
Absolutely.
Just grow him on other people without using numbers, would you? So more on Kingsley Enagbare. He's just a pure pass rusher. Fourth best pressure percentage in college football this year. Highest pass rush win rate among SEC defensive linemen. Just one consistently as a passer. He had a great Senior Bowl too. We didn't talk about him that much in the Senior Bowl podcast because he was coached by the Lions, but he was winning all Senior Bowl. I think we're really lucky he made it to pick 35. We just got a pure, phenomenal pass rusher to pair outside Carl Lawson. New York Sack Exchange is back, baby.
That's what we need. We need the New York Sack Exchange back in New York. But with all that said, I like the Kingsley Enagbare pick. I definitely wanted to address edge rusher, whether it was a trade market or free agency, but just given the prices of what we would have to pay. Trade market didn't work out, obviously. Free agent market didn't work out because we wanted to at least address the safety and tight end first. We prioritized that. And we just both felt that Dante Jackson was such a great fit in this defense that we would be running, given his price tag, that he was just too much to pass on. But with this pick, we were able to get our edge rusher that we can pair up with rotating in Carl Lawson, Bryce Huff, and even JFM. I think this is a great defensive line unit. And obviously, when you add in the interior, where JFM can slide in on the interior, you also have Sheldon Rankins, and you also have Quinnen Williams. It's just this is going to be a nasty defensive line that could really get after the quarterback. Now, I would like to move on to our 38th pick. And at this pick, we picked Trey McBride. Now, we have said a lot about Trey McBride in the first episode of this podcast with the Senior Bowl. And I don't want to go and repeat all of it, but I'm just going to say sticky hands. He could play above the rim. Good blocker. He could do it all as a tight end. And pairing him with Njoku, I think that's an excellent tight end room. And with these two additions, the Jets can run all the 22 personnel they can desire. They could even spend the entire game in 22 personnel, and I wouldn't complain at all.
I would not say a peep if they ran 22 all game if they had McBride and Njoku. Not a peep.
I would be so excited. I don't think you fully understand or comprehend how excited I would be. Now, moving on to our third round pick. This is where we went back to the defensive room. Hussein, who did we pick on defense?
This was really big on my pick. So here we wanted a safety. We got Jalen Kurts from free agency. We obviously need another guy. We don't have enough there. So the two guys we were really between based on how the board broke. The guy we really wanted, Jalen Pitre, went just before this, so he was out of our range. We were between Leon O'Neal Jr. from Texas A&M and Verone McKinley from Oregon. We went with Verone McKinley, and I'm going to start with why we didn't pick Leon O'Neal. We didn't pick Leon O'Neal mostly because he is a strong safety, an in-the-box safety. He doesn't have the long speed or the deep speed to play center field. And when I was discussing Jaron Kurts, I said that it's not a problem that he's mostly in the box safety, but it will affect our draft plans. And this is how it directly affected it, because we can't draft and sign in the box safety who's going to play deep. So we went with Verone McKinley from Oregon. And this kid, let me tell you, ball hawk, stud. 3 years as a starter, he's turned up 11 interceptions, with six coming this year. He is the definition of a center fielder. He had a pick against CJ Stroud in Ohio State's prolific offense to kind of put the game away early this season. This is a dude who's going to force turnovers. I think my biggest knock on him, and this is more so a joke than anything else, is that he had 11 interceptions in his career and he didn't return a single one for a touchdown.
I honestly could care less, as long as he can actually catch the ball and the ball doesn't knock into his helmet and pop off like Jamal Adams.
He's a pure ball hawk back there in center field. We got a guy who can force turnovers. This defensive back room has just been essentially overturned in 1 year with playmakers who get the football, and that's what we need. Verone McKinley does pick at 69 to play free safety.
Yeah, and I just want to add some points to Verone McKinley, because he really excels in coverage, and that's something the Jets really desperately need on this defense, because it's been a really long time since we've had that ball hawking safety who can generate turnovers. And probably the last time we had one was Kerry Rhodes. So with Verone McKinley, he's got great speed and athleticism. He can track ball carriers, and he can even track the ball in the air extremely well, which also plays a role in his ball hawking ability. But I love his instincts and coverage. And I think this is a really, really good fit on this team, given the needs and just given the roles that we already filled in free agency, with Jaron Kurts being in the box safety, because we cover the box safety and then we cover the center fielder. And I'm really excited by how this defense is turning out. We made the addition to linebacker. We drafted a great edge rusher, and then we filled out our defensive backfield with a signing in the cornerback room who will provide some veteran leadership. And then we drafted a young, promising center fielder, and then we signed a great box safety. So I am so happy with how this has turned out so far. Now, moving on to our next pick, this is where we decided to go back to the linebacker well, and we selected Darian Beavers, who is also a Senior Bowl participant. I'm pretty sure he played alongside Chad Muma as well.
Yeah, he is. He was on our team. We did coach him. Linebacker from Cincinnati. Adding some more depth and young talent to that room, because let's be real, we have Olukon, we have CJ Mosley. We're not going to play the nickel the entire game. We are going to need some depth back there. And I like Beavers a lot. There's actually one rep. I think it was one of the few reps McBride truly lost during the one-on-ones. And it was Beavers locking him up on a red zone rep. He's good in pass coverage. He was the leader of that Cincinnati defense, who of course went to the playoffs. He's a good developmental kind of stash pick. I know you don't want to really be hearing that in the fourth round, but he's depth, much needed depth at that position, that could potentially play this year if you need him to, because he's strong enough in coverage to play him.
Yeah, I agree. And even if he doesn't immediately start year one, he definitely has some special teams ability where at least he can contribute in some way, shape, or form. I really foresee him being a sub linebacker of some sorts while contributing on special teams really in year one. And that just buys him and the coaching staff time to mold him into the player that we all envision a linebacker to look like in this Jets defense with Robert Saleh. I think I'm ready to move on to the next pick, Hussein. I'm very excited about this next pick. Do you have any other points? Do you have any other things to say about Darian Beavers before we move on?
No, but should I set a timer on this next pick? Because I know how much you love him. I know you might talk about him for 30 minutes.
No, I think I can control myself enough for this pick, but I think for the Tyler Smith pick, sorry for the spoilers, I think you will have to put a timer on me. But going through the James Cook pick, I really like what he brings to the table. He can provide great pass protection. He can catch out of the backfield, and he's got some quickness in his game. And I love his explosiveness when he runs through the hole. He brings something to the Jets running back room that the Jets don't really have right now. Michael Carter, we all saw what he can do in terms of his elusiveness and breaking tackles last year, but James Cook just provides something a little different in terms of the passing game. And he's got some really, really soft hands. And that is such a stark difference when we got to see Ty Johnson's butterfingers last year. With James Cook, I don't think we would ever see something like a hideous drop that Ty Johnson would commit again, because he's got great hands. And something that is very quarterback friendly is when your running back is your outlet receiver and he can get open and even make people miss at the first tackle attempt to gain some yards. So with that said, James Cook in the fourth round, sign me up. This would be another great running back add in the fourth round in back-to-back years.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. James Cook is definitely not his brother, but man, sometimes he looks like him. Sometimes he really does. He doesn't have the top end speed. He doesn't have breakaway speed, but you're not talking about an RB1 here, but you are talking about a good back. My girlfriend's a big Michigan fan, so I watched a lot of Michigan this year. When Georgia played Michigan in the playoffs, there's one play. This was kind of like the dagger that put the game away, had to turn the TV off. James Cook lined up outside the numbers, and he ran a stutter and go route, 40-yard touchdown. It was just, and I think he did the same thing to Alabama.
Oh, he did.
So, yeah. So he did it twice against the third and second ranked team in college football. It's just insane. He's a great receiving back. He's a great fit.
Yeah. And I'm just going to piggyback off of what you said with the Georgia and Michigan game is that he takes snaps in the backfield, but he also lines up as a receiver in the slot and he goes in motion. And as a kind of a cherry on top, he's even lined up as outside the numbers, like you said, in the Michigan game. And he's got some excellent route running ability. I would be so excited if James Cook was a Jet. I think he would be. Could you just imagine an offense where if you're facing the Jets and you have to account for where Elijah Moore is, Treylon Burks, James Cook, all of them, because they all could potentially motion at some point.
Joe, you are dying on this motion hill.
I am. I really am. Because
you're dying on the motion hill.
You want to know why, though? Because when the Jets can use and execute this motion how it should be, that's when their offense looked the best last year.
Besides the time Zach Wilson kept it on a 4th-and-2, but we don't talk about that on this podcast.
Yeah, we don't. No, we don't. We're not going to discuss that. But when Zach Wilson looked good after injury, that was when Michael Fleur was able to motion people, orbit motion, do whatever he wanted. And that opens up some lanes in the zones that Zach Wilson can squeeze the ball in there. And we've seen Zach Wilson squeeze in some crazy throws into really tight, tight windows in these zone coverages. So if it was up to me, if you have James Cook, Treylon Burks, Elijah Moore, even Corey Davis, all those players who can motion, why not? Why not? And then you have Trey McBride who can, obviously he's not going to orbit motion, but he can do other motions.
Oh, we're not motioning Trey McBride?
Yeah, of course. If it was up to me, someone different would be motioning every play.
I'll tell you one thing. If we can add Burks, McBride, and James Cook, Michael LaFleur would just be so in his bag all season.
He's going to be in the booth bag is what we call it.
In the booth bag. Maybe with a hoodie up or something. Hoodie Mike LaFleur in the booth in his bag.
It's hoodie boothful floor to you.
Wow.
HBL.
Never saying that again.
But I want to move on to my next pick that I'm very, very excited about. And you don't really get to say that you're excited about a fifth round pick, but man, I am so excited if Tyler Smith is that fifth round pick. Hussein, have you watched any of Tyler Smith at all?
Joe, do I look like someone who's watched fifth round offensive lineman to you?
The only reason I ask is because I do recall sending you some tweets of clips of him. You probably don't remember, but I will summarize what I saw to you, and hopefully it'll jog your memory. Tyler Smith is an absolute mauler in the running game. He tosses people around, and he pancakes them, and he finishes them. He has got the mean attitude that, honestly, Becton had in college as a run blocker. He, when he blocks you, he actively tries to embarrass you. And that's something that people. And that's something that Ekwonu excels at. Tyler Smith, if you watch his tape, excels at, as well as Becton, as we all know. But I just want to point out that Tyler Smith, I forgot what team he's on or plays for in college, but they were playing Cincinnati. They got some pretty good defenders, right?
Oh, yeah.
Tyler Smith, he was blocking against against Myjai Sanders, who's a great, great prospect. And he was one of the edge rushers that were considered, at least in the second round. But there's a clip of him just blocking Myjai Sanders and just pushing him right off the screen with ease. He just opens a lane as big as the Red Sea. It's just insane, honestly. And I also watched a little bit of the game against Ohio State, and he went up against Tyreek Smith, who is a pretty good edge rusher prospect. He was at the Senior Bowl. He looked good. And something that I've noticed with him going up against Tyreek Smith, a fellow draft prospect, is that he is very good at using angles when he is pass protecting. Now, don't get me wrong, his pass protection could use a little work. Usually when you're an offensive lineman and you get off your snap, you usually want to strike the defender somewhere in the chest with a punch to knock him off balance. He certainly needs help on that. But in terms of his run blocking ability and his ability to just maul these defenders, I think this guy has some legit upside in this offense that really wants to focus on running the ball. And if the Jets draft him and develop him and take their time with him, I think he could really, really develop into a damn good lineman. And I 100% believe that, because it's been a very long time since the Jets drafted a lineman in the late rounds, developed him, and turned him into a starter. And the Jets need to get back to that. They tried to do it with Cam Clark. It didn't work out because of injuries. But if they're going to draft the lineman in the later rounds to develop, Tyler Smith is the guy. I don't want to ramble too long, but that's all I really have to say about Tyler Smith. Hussein, do you have any other thoughts to add?
I mean, yeah, if we're going to talk about, you know, drafting and stashing an offensive line who, in your words, likes embarrassing people, it's in the fifth round. I'm never going to say no to that. Even if there's like a, even if it's like the 50-50 shot, he's a bust, probably higher. Like, you know, it's the mentality you kind of go for, the scheme fit and all that. And you just hope it works out, because the way you described him, making kind of seem like an all-pro already. So,
well, he definitely has holes in his game, don't get me wrong, but what he loves to do is what the Jets want to do. And they have the play. They, in the Jets in this draft, we took Ikem Ekwonu, and we have Becton, and obviously AVT. Just adding another nasty lineman in the run game, that's just, the Jets could really bring in an extra lineman on some plays with Tyler Smith and just absolutely go for the jugular on some of these defenses.
Do you know what I think? Yeah, I just realized we did subconsciously this draft period.
What?
We added bullies on every front.
Oh, absolutely.
I didn't even realize. Like Ekwonu, bully. Burks, bully. And Igbari, bully. McBride, bully.
That's something the Jets have really been missing on these teams. And they really haven't had that kind of mentality since 2009.
It's like we
just want a team of bullies.
It's like we just, while we're doing this mock draft, we just listen to the video of Ron Middleton just saying hit it over and over again subconsciously.
I still think Ron Middleton should be a head coach just for that.
That's one of my favorite videos of all time. All right, you ready to move on?
Absolutely. Take it away, Hussein. This is our last pick of the draft.
Just as a heads up, we were not against trading at all in this draft. I know we didn't trade once. There were just no offers while we were doing the mock draft that made it worth it. So we decided to stand pat all of our picks. So our final pick of the draft comes the second pick of the fifth round at 163. Here we took Tyreek Smith, the edge rusher from Ohio State. Now, of course, we already drafted one edge, but Robert Saleh loves defensive linemen. He loves rotating them. He's going to rotate them a lot, as we saw last year with the amount of time Nathan Shepard saw the field. God help me. Tyreek Smith, he didn't put up the best stats. 3 sacks this year, 5 tackles for a loss, but he's a highly touted recruit coming into college. Ohio State's known for breeding edge rushers, and he's kind of seen as a guy who has potential. He's seen as a guy who can rise with the good spot, and I think here might be a good spot for him. Robert Saleh loves the size from his defensive ends. Tyreek Smith clocks in at 6'3" and about 250 to 260 pounds. I think he'd be a good, kind of like Tyler Smith, a good stash and develop pick. And I think if there's any position to kind of stash and develop that this team needs, it's in the trenches on both sides. And we address that in the 5th round with guys we think have a lot of upside.
You nailed it, Hussein. I am getting really excited over this mock offseason, just who we've been able to add and select in this draft, because like you said, these are bullies.
I also think with this mock offseason, when we read off the final results to you guys in a few minutes, is that it's also realistic. We didn't go and, you know, sign Devontae Adams and then sign for Chandler Jones or anything like that. We kept it realistic as to what this team could really look like. And it's still exciting because this team still has a lot of potential the way we constructed it.
Absolutely. This is where we're going to go and just read off the final depth chart, just to give you guys a full picture of what the starters and even substitution players are going to look like on this team. Now, I'll read off the offensive players. Hussein, feel free to read off the defensive players. But starting with quarterback, obviously that is Zach Wilson. Joe Flacco as the backup. As we move to running back, we have Michael Carter. We signed Tevin Coleman in free agency, and then we also added James Cook in the draft. At wide receiver, we have Corey Davis, Elijah Moore, Treylon Burks, Braxton Berrios, and Emmanuel Sanders. I think that is an exceptionally deep receiver room, which is so incredibly important, given the fact that even though we thought heading into this past year that we had a deep receiver room, it was quickly taken away from us with injuries. So injuries happen, and Joe Douglas, he needs to be super focused on just drafting as many weapons as possible to avoid what happens to Zach Wilson at the end of the year, because I don't want to see him throwing to Tyreek Black or Ty Black.
It was Tyreek Black.
Like, just no, just no. Just don't do that. Whatever that is, don't do it. But moving on, we get to our tight ends. We got Njoku and McBride. Offensive line, we got Becton, AVT, Connor McGovern, Ekwonu, Fant, and then we added Tyler Smith in as a sixth lineman coming in on some packages, as well as just a standard backup. Now, Hussein, this brings us to the defensive side of the ball. So fire away, Hussein.
Now, before I do that, I have a question for you, Joe. If you were Michael Fuller, if you're running 6 offensive linemen with Tyler Smith out there, are you motioning him too?
I think I would motion him to the other side of the formation. Yeah, why not? Why not?
All right. Enough. So the defensive side. On the edges, we have Carl Lawson and Kingsley Enagbare. We have Bryce Huff and Tyreek Smith as our reserves there. On the interior, where we have John Franklin Myers, which is where I think he mostly belongs. He can bump out, as we know. And we have Quinnen Williams and Sheldon Rankins. In the linebacker room, we have CJ Mosley. We signed Foyset Olukun for $6 million. We have Darian Beavers drafted in the 4th round. And we still have Hamza Nasruddin, Jermaine Sherwood, and Blake Cashman. In the cornerback room, we have the holdovers Bryce Hall, Brandon Echols, and Michael Carter, and we signed Dante Jackson. And the safety room, which I'm honestly most excited about from all of this, we added Jairon Curse for strong safety. We added Verone McKinley to play our free safety center field role, brought back Joyner for depth, and of course still have Ashton Can't Take an Angle Davis.
Ashton Can't Take an Angle, Can't Tackle Davis. I really like this roster, how it looks now. I mean, I love the secondary. I love the edge rushers that we added. And I also love the targets we got for Zach Wilson.
I think this is the most realistic, but also, like, in my mind, most best case scenario. And if this team is coached properly and Wilson takes the jump as he's supposed to and stays relatively healthy, this should be a team that I don't see why they can't compete for the playoffs, compete for 9 or 10 wins and with the wild card spot.
Absolutely. And if this team has any ounce or shred of luck that they can at least stay healthy all year, I can absolutely see that happening. Because with this roster, Becton, AVT, Ekwonu, those are three road graders. A lot of teams, they're going to just good luck stopping the run game. Good luck. I really wish you luck on that, because how do you stop that? I can't even think of one other team that has that many run maulers on the same offensive line.
You don't stop it. You just sit back and let it happen to you.
Yeah. I mean, we even saw the crazy part is when the Jets played the Buccaneers, a lot of that game, they were really able to run the ball in that game too. And that was with no Becton. Obviously, Ekwonu wasn't there.
There was no McGovern there.
So that was from left to right. Connor McDermott, AVT, Dan Feeney, Greg Van Roten, I'm pretty sure, right? Against the Bucs. I'm pretty sure he played.
LDT maybe?
Maybe LDT.
Maybe LDT.
We'll say LDT. And then, of course, Morgan Moses. And the Buccaneers, they fielded one of the best run defense units. On certain plays, they had some real trouble stopping the running game. And it even permeated into the end of the game on that last drive, which we're not going to talk about the last play, but the Jets were able to get. We're not going to speak about it, but the Jets were able to get the scoring to the red zone really purely based off of their run game, because their run game, the blocking opened up holes that really shouldn't have been opened up against a defense of that caliber, especially given the talent on the offensive line at that time. But now you add in a healthy Becton, you add in a reasonable starter at center with Connor McGovern, you add an absolute elite talent as a run blocker and just another person who just loves to embarrass defenders in Ekwonu. Fant, we all know, is a serviceable tackle, mostly known for his pass protection, but he's okay in the run game. And then you have a sixth lineman with Tyler Smith, who also just loves to bully. So good luck, defense. Good luck stopping the running game with, now that I mentioned, also Carter is elusive and will break a lot of tackles. And you also have James Cook to worry about out of the backfield on passing plays.
Yeah, I love the way this team came out. You guys let us know what you think of our team, what you would have done differently, and just sound off in general.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're definitely approaching the very end of this podcast. So we really hope that all the listeners out there enjoyed our mock off season for the Jets. Now we're going to wrap up the episode, and we would absolutely love to hear your thoughts on how this offseason turned out for us. So feel free to tweet at us whether you think this was a Revis offseason or a Butthead offseason. I definitely think it was a Revis offseason. This could definitely be a legendary one. And considering the holes in the roster that we were originally dealt, I definitely felt that we addressed a lot of these concerns. So please like, comment, and follow for more Jets content.
Peace out, homies.
Peace out.